Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the program. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in, friends, to the NOLA Drink Show. Always happy to have you here. If you're listening on the radio, happy Friday. If you're listening on the podcast, happy whatever day it is for you. Yeah, certainly glad to have you all here, friends. Got a great show coming up for you today. Have two great guests on who both have been on the show multiple times, but never together. Jeff Beachbum Berry and Paul Gustings. Of course, Jeff Beachbum Berry is the foremost tiki cocktail and tiki culture historian on the planet. He also operates, along with his wife, Aneen, a very, very fine tiki bar and restaurant, great food there, by the way, called Latitude 29 in the French Quarter here in New Orleans. Just a super interesting guy. You know that. Most of you probably know who Jeff Beachbum Berry is already, you know, author of great books, all kinds of cool stuff. Always a pleasure to see him and have him on. And then legendary New Orleans bartender, Paul Gustings. Paul's been behind the stick, as it were, in New Orleans, in some of the most historic places around town, for that matter, but in New Orleans since the 70s. And I've known both these guys for quite a while now, and it's they're good friends, and they're my good friends. And so we really just have a good hoot here and a lot of laughs in the conversation. It's one of those fun shows where I don't have to do, I mean, okay, everybody who listens to this show probably knows already that I don't do a heck of a lot of preparation, right? That's not how we roll on the NOLA Drink Show, for better or for worse. But I don't really have to. I didn't even, maybe one or two topic ideas that I had in the back of my brain going into this conversation, because it's just funny conversation and lots of great stories between those two guys. And we taped that over at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. Thanks to them for hosting us, which reminds me of the next thing. Want to give, let you all know, I've talked about this in recent weeks and so on and so forth, but this show is a part of the Nitty Grits Podcast Network, which is part of the basically the media outlet, if you will, for the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, part of the National Food and Beverage Foundation. And we've relaunched the podcast network there. You can go to Apple and iTunes and Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, I guess what they're calling it now. And you can find a network page where the different shows that are part of the network are on there. It's a growing network now that we've relaunched it. We're going to be looking to add some new shows here very soon. And it was a privilege to be a part of getting this back up off the ground, as it were, with the Nitty Grits Podcast Network. So we've been taping a lot at the museum because it's just a great place to be. It's an inspiring place to be. And we have this great community of growing shows and all kinds of other cool stuff, not just related to the podcast network, that goes on at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. So check it out. Go check out southernfood.org. Again, southernfood.org. You'll see a tab right there at the top navigation that says media, I believe. And then you'll see the Nitty Grits Podcast Network there in the dropdown. It's pretty easy to find. You'll find my show there. You'll find Liz Williams, who is the founder of the museum, her show there, Tip of the Tongue, and some other stuff as well. And again, a growing list of shows. So I encourage you to go check that out. Of course, you can go to noladrinks.com, our website, and you can link up with it there. And you can, of course, find this show on all the major podcast platforms. And one of the things that we often do on this show is we have a podcast only segment called Another Shot with NOLA Drinks. You can only get that on the podcast, and the podcast is usually out a handful of days after the show airs on the radio. And the conversation, I'll just tee it up this way, the conversation that I had with Jeff and Paul on the podcast, the only thing, was a lot of fun. We actually talk about another friend of ours, Maggie Campbell, who operates Privateer Rum in Massachusetts, and we sip on some of her rum and talk about it. It's a really fine example, probably the finest example, I would argue, of American rum that you can find today. So that's a part of the podcast only conversation that I have with these guys. Next week, the plan as it stands right now, we're going to be chatting with two more of my friends. See, I just try and bring in people I know because it makes it easy, right? Kiata Mincy and Tiffany Barrier, both two very fine bartenders, consultants. They're based out of the Atlanta area. Tiffany is known as the drinking coach. She does a lot of consulting. Kiata is a super talented bartender. She goes by the handle Pictures and Cocktails on Instagram. She's also a fierce fashionista, I will say that as well. But two good friends of mine, so I haven't seen them, obviously, in a good long time, and it's going to be really fun. We'll be doing that one over Zoom, of course, getting seeing what they're up to, getting a little bit more about the scene in the ATL and all that stuff. So that's the plan next week. Still trying to dial in our schedules. We're going to be doing another show down the road here pretty soon, talking about sustainability behind the bar. We're going to be doing a show on the Southern Food and Beverage Museum itself, talking about the history of the museum and kind of the programming of what's going on there today and how you can connect with the museum, even if you're not in New Orleans. So that's just some things, and we'll have other news and other fun stuff coming up too. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show after that big information download, and we're going to be back chatting with Jeff Beachbum Berry and Paul Gustings. Come on back. Mighty cootie fire, you on a mighty broad day.
Brought to you by the St. Rock Market, a local food hall featuring 12 unique food and beverage entrepreneurs serving globally inspired meals from barbecue platters to Mediterranean cuisine. Located at 2381 St. Claude Avenue, the St. Rock Market is open every day of the week for breakfast, lunch, dinner, coffee, and cocktails. We offer online ordering, curbside pickup, and both indoor and patio dining. Learn more at strockmarket.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. Happy to have you here, as always, as you know. And if you were listening at the top of the show, and you better have been, you'll know who we're talking to here today. We're at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, and I have two very good friends on, two great guests on, and thanks for making time. Let's see, we'll start with you, because we'll go in alphabetical order. Jeff Beachbum Berry. Jeff,
hello.
How are you?
I'm good, Brian. Good to be here.
It's good to see you, man. It's been a little while.
It has indeed. Yeah, email and texting just doesn't cover it. Cut it.
No, I know it's a real treat to see my face. So
you know what? In this day and age, it actually is.
Like, that's the first time anybody's ever said that to me. Thank you.
Well, enjoy it while the pandemic lasts.
I think you look better with a mask.
Come July, I'll be
because as soon as it's over, you're not going to get compliments like that anymore.
No, fair enough. Okay. Yeah, they silver lining. I appreciate that, Jeff. Thank you. And Paul Gustings, Mr. I, how are you?
Hello.
How's it going?
Lovely. How can it not go lovely? I mean, you know, what else would I want this year?
To see my face. We were just talking about that.
Sure.
And then dead air. I love it.
The one you're showing me now.
Yeah, right. Exactly. See, and I knew you guys exactly when I said this right before we started a recording here, that there's really no game plan when I have the two of you on. And because, I mean, I can just sit here and be insulted. Jeff, we did just call him the Don Rickles of the Netherlands, didn't we?
We did.
I didn't hear that.
So
really?
What we have here, for those who are unfamiliar, is that we have the world's slowest bartender, and we have the world's deafest and blindest bartender. And can you guess which one is which?
That is a really good. That's
I
a
know.
Really good
I can see you from here. I can hear you, and you have glasses on, so it must be all you, Jeff.
Good enough. I guess you've overcome those odds, then, haven't you?
Paul?
I know.
Well, as you
time
said,
to get
Paul,
back
he's,
to
he's
work.
Got, he's got the hat on, right? So you said, and I appreciate what you said. When he has the hat on, he's Jeff Beachbum Berry, and then before he didn't have the hat on, he was just Jeff Berry.
Yes,
actually. When I have the hat on, I'm Paul Gustings, which is a story I'll let Paul tell. But first, I have to preface it. When we first opened Latitude 29, our first regular, and I'm proud to say, was Mr. Gustings. And he would sit at a part of the bar which was very close to the service bar, where I, in the beginning, would be garnishing drinks. And people would always come over to that part of the bar and go, "It's you, isn't it?" And they would be saying that to Paul, who has very similar facial hair and also wore a hat. And you know, tropical shirt, yeah. And he would say, "Yeah, it's me." And I said, "Oh, I'm a really big admirer of yours. It's great to meet you." And he goes, "Oh, it's nice to meet you too." And then this would go on for 10 minutes before either of them figured out that the guy who was talking was not admiring Paul Gustings; he was admiring me in the form of Paul Gustings. There's a better story, which
hey, placebos are not bad. What can I tell you?
Well, the thing is that it's getting to the point now where I kind of want to hire Paul to be me in public situations. You know, this is like, he's better at
an assassination. Yeah, thanks.
Like those Middle Eastern potentates who have like lookalikes.
Yeah, like the Kim Jong-un thing, sure.
But
yeah.
People would, there was one guy who came up to you on the street, this little story that you have told me before about.
Refresh my memory.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to steal
I heard
it from
story,
you.
But yeah, go ahead and do it, because I think I have heard this story.
Somebody came up to Paul and said, Mr. Wondrich, I'm a big fan of yours.
Hold on a minute. That guy was the maitre d' at a bar in New York or a club in New York. And I'm walking out the door, and he comes up to me and he goes, "Hey, how are you doing?" So we're talking, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, "Do I know you?" He goes, "But David, we're friends." And I said, "Oh, you think I'm David Wondrich?" He goes, "Yes." I said, "I'm not." And he goes, "Oh, then who are you?" I said, Jeff Beachbum Berry.
Oh, and did you give an autograph then at that point?
Probably. I don't know.
I like your body double idea there, Jeff. Get Paul.
He's much better at interacting with people than I am. You know, it's like he's had a lot of experience.
Yes, fair enough.
I like the guy who did an interview with you and then came back like 3 weeks later or so. And he comes over to me and he's talking to me and blah, blah, blah. And he says, then he looks at me and goes like, "You have no idea who I am, do you?" I'm like, "No, but obviously you don't have any idea who I am either, because if you think I'm Jeff Berry," he goes, "Yeah." I'm like, "I'm not." And right then you walk out of the kitchen. I said, "That's him right there."
Perfect timing.
Perfect timing.
We'll have to do that when we can travel again, because we'll have to get Wondrich on again with the two of you. Because then we can just kind of compare faces and say, this is Jeff Berry, this is Paul Gustings.
There's a face hair thing going on.
There is.
I have a really great idea for a T-shirt. You know what Brother Cleve is?
Remind me.
Brother Cleve, Boston. You know what Brother Cleve is, don't you?
Yeah, he's a musician. He used to be with Combustible Edison. He was part of the Cocktail Nation music revival.
Right.
And he was also one of the first people to introduce classic cocktails back to Boston at the bar called the B-Side.
Okay.
Oh, wow. So he's still around.
Well, the thing is, if you put a straw hat on us and we all wear glasses and we all have beards and you put us next to each other, there might be a little confusion there. So my idea is take a picture of all four of us and put us on a T-shirt with the wrong name next to us and see how many people notice.
Okay.
If you put the four of us together, what you basically have is the Three Stooges, if we were all Shemp.
Oh, I was thinking about more of the four riders of the apocalypse.
The four horsemen of the apocalypse. I can't ride a horse anymore. That's not going to happen.
Well, Jeff, you were noting at the top of the segment, we were talking about, you said you were the world's slowest bartender. You made us a lovely Mai Tai here.
Yeah, that was like 2 hours ago.
That was like 2 hours ago. I mean, my ice is largely melted, but it's still a pretty tasty Mai Tai.
Well, it is wet ice, to be fair.
And I did say I'm going to nominate you for best bartender in high volume bar in the Spirited Awards of Tales of the Cocktail this year.
As long as the volume is four people who have a lot of other stuff to do.
But and we do have actually photographic and video evidence of you making the drink, because it is rare, I think. But tell us about, why don't we talk about the Mai Tai a little bit, but tell us about the Latitude 29 Mai Tai in a bottle mix.
Well, this situation here, where we're in a place that's been like every place else in the city, if it's a bar has been shut down, they have no produce, they have no fresh limes, they have no stuff to work with. So all the liquor's been locked away. So this Mai Tai mix, this Latitude 29 formula Mai Tai mix, which is the Wiki Mai Tai mix, it's called. It's for sale now on Amazon and through the Orgeat Works website. This is the third collaboration I've had with Adam Kolesar of Orgeat Works, calls himself Tiki Adam up in Brooklyn. And he has this artisanal, all-natural syrup company. And when we first opened Latitude in 2014, he called me up and said, "Hey, do you have anybody doing your Orgeat?" I said, "No, but I'd really love to have somebody do my Orgeat, because that's the last thing I want to do. You know, I don't want to blanch almonds and squeeze them and do all the horrible things you have to do to get good Orgeat."
Yeah, tell people what Orgeat is if they don't know.
Almond syrup. It's an almond syrup. And it's a pain in the ass to make, many, many stages. And he said, "I can make that for you." And I said, "Cool." So he made one. That was the first product he sold. And then came the Falernum, which is even harder to make.
Right.
It's basically making Orgeat plus all kinds of other stuff you have to put in there. So for the third one, he said, "Hey, Jeff, how about a Mai Tai mix?" And I was a little hesitant at first, because that kind of goes against everything that the cocktail renaissance had been leading up to, which is like fresh ingredients, no premixes, restoring the cocktail to its artisanal craft glory. And it didn't take me long to reverse myself, because I've been in so many situations where if I go and do lectures in Havana or other parts of the world where they don't
have... Notice how you just dropped Havana in there as the first one. Yeah. Just to be cool. Okay, go on. Sorry.
No, the places where they don't have
orgeat.
Doesn't
need to do that, really.
Oh, okay, fair.
You know, they don't have orgeat. They don't even have curacao. And the last thing you're going to find in these places is Martinique Agricole rum and a good dark Jamaican rum, all the things you need to make a proper Mai Tai.
Right.
And it occurred to me, like, if all I had to do was have every flavor in a bottle except for lime juice and a white rum, which you can get a lime juice and a white rum Bacardi White in a 7-Eleven in Wichita, Kansas. You know, you're not going to have a problem getting that.
Where is that?
It's between here.
It's a little bit outside of Havana.
Okay. All right.
Okay. You got it. Okay. Google it, man. I forgot you're blind. we'll show you where it is later.
Thanks.
So anyway,
we'll pull out the big board.
Long story short, there's all kinds of things that go into a proper Mai Tai, which are very hard to get for people who are, say, on vacation, are in an unfamiliar city where they don't know where the good liquor store is that has Martinique Agricole rum and a good dark Jamaican rum and a curacao and an orgeat. And so what Adam said, let's do is let's put every one of those flavors in this mix bottle so that all you have to do is add lime juice and a neutral white rum.
Okay.
He's got the flavors of an aged Agricole rum and a dark Jamaican rum, that sort of really high estery, molassesy.
Yeah, kind of the funk.
And that woody taste. He put all that in the syrup.
You don't want to give away trade secrets, but like essences, how did he accomplish that?
He didn't even tell me.
Okay.
You know,
okay,
fair enough. The only role I played in this was taste testing, and that took 3 years. He went through a million different versions of it and finally to get to this point. But in this bottle is the flavor of a Martinique Agricole, is the flavor of a dark Jamaican, is the flavor, the burnt orange peel flavor of a curacao, and also an orgeat. We didn't want to go the next step and put the citrus element in there because that's when you get into the anti-craft ethos. It's never going to taste as good as if you put a fresh. All we ask of you is a lime and a bottle of cheap white rum, and this bottle does the rest. And I was originally going to call it, the way he sold it to me was like, okay, this is like an emergency Mai Tai mix. You're on a cruise ship, you're on vacation, nobody has anything that you need to make this drink. And also, I didn't anticipate the pandemic. I've been using this stuff at home because I can't go out and buy all the things I need
right.
You know, to make the drink. Also, I'm lazy, and this is much easier for me to do. So it's turned out to be something I'm actually rather proud of. And we changed the name from Emergency Mai Tai Mix to Wiki Wiki, which is Hawaiian for quickly, because I didn't want to put any negative connotations on it, because I think it is a good product. Oh, and all hail Adam. I was not the person who crafted this. Mm-hmm. I was just the person who said, yeah, that tastes good.
You know? I think it's great. And you used Cruzan white rum, which you can find anywhere.
And the irony is, people are writing me and saying, hey, I've got this really nice aged rum. Can I try it with this? And I say, don't do it. You know, this isn't meant for that.
No need for that, right?
Yeah, right. This is meant for when all you could get is like, you know, convenience store white rum. And it's like, and that's the whole point of the mix.
There you go. Well, we got about 2 minutes, you guys, before we're going to take a break. Well, now, you know, Paul, Mai Tai, it's kind of an interesting drink because, I mean, there's a lot of bad ones out there.
I've had most of them, I think.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. So, tell me your thoughts on the drink and what makes a Mai Tai a Mai Tai?
What makes a Mai Tai a Mai Tai?
Yeah.
Jeff Berry has to make it.
Yeah, there you go. Fair enough.
Otherwise, it's not a Mai Tai.
Okay.
You know, and it's funny that you mentioned the Agricole rum because that's basically, I really like Agricole rum. Mm-hmm. Most people don't because they think it tastes nasty or whatever taste it is.
I love it.
I really, really like it. Mm-hmm. You know, but then again, my favorite rum for years and years and years, of course, that was also years and years ago, was Negrita. And the first time I actually mentioned that to Jeff, he went like, oh my God, that's the worst rum I've ever had in my life, or something similar like that, you know, until he went to Buenos Aires, where he tasted a rum, a Negrita rum from before 1970.
Oh yeah, it was just in this little cafe. The bottle had obviously been there for like 40 years, and it was with Dave Wondersen. We ordered it. And it was delicious. And all of a sudden, I could see where you were coming from. You
know, and that was probably the last time I had it. Was in 1980 or something.
Right,
you know?
Everybody's taste is different too, right, Jeff? You and I were talking on the phone the other day, and I won't name names, but we were talking about a particular rum that like you just didn't like it. And I like it, but it was just, you know, very much a taste thing. Like, you're like, there's nothing wrong with it, I just don't like it. I'm like, I guess that's what makes the world
go around. Well, it's like what the rum ambassador, the global rum ambassador Ian Burrell says, if you like it, it's a good rum.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It works for most things in life, right? Well, let's do this, you guys. Let's take a little break here on the show, and we're going to come back and talk more with Paul Gustings and Jeff Beachbum Berry. Come on.
The Mayhaw is the craft cocktail bar located in the historic St. Rock Market. Join us every day for happy hour from 4 to 7 p.m. and weekly specials like Tiki Tuesdays, Whiskey Wednesdays, and Thrifty Thursdays. The Mayhaw offers local craft brews and a robust and ethically sourced wine selection for enjoyment with your meal on the patio or for carryout. The Mayhaw is excited to present Mayhaw Mobile, a cocktail, beer, and wine delivery service. Learn more at strochmarket.com.
Everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in. Always good sidebar conversation here with Paul and Jeff. And actually, we were talking about this, you guys, that this is the first time, Paul, you've been on the show a bunch of times. Jeff's been on the show a bunch of times. For that, I apologize to both of you deeply. But you guys have never been on together.
How long have you been on?
Pretty much every week.
Wow.
I mean, this show's been going on, coming up on 4 years, I think.
Exciting.
Thanks.
So you're most
that was you're like, incredibly genuine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. You can just look at me.
I can just tell,
you know?
Even though it's radio, your face just beams right
exactly.
through the audio and shows
you know?
Genuine admiration for me being
well,
on almost 4 years.
What was the guy that was always in his own movies?
What? Who?
What was the guy that was always in his own movies?
Orson Welles.
No.
He was.
Yeah. He did The Birds.
Oh, Alfred Hitchcock.
Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh, where he would just make the cameo.
He was always make a cameo.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So. Gotcha. But you've been a featured guest on the show. It's more than a cameo. Yes.
When was that?
Apparently, I do a great job rolling out the hospitality as a guest on my show
because
it's
the
incredibly
red carpet.
Memorable.
I mean, you know, we had to knock
Jeff,
on the door to get in here.
You've never been on the show with Paul before. I just want to move away from him in this conversation if I can right now.
I can confirm that. I can confirm that. But I can also tell you, I have many Paul Gusting stories, but I just want to tell this one quick one.
Please.
Because it was my introduction to the ethos, the Gustings ethos. I was having brunch with a bunch of people at some French Quarter restaurant out on the patio where Paul was the bartender, and I didn't know that because we were not anywhere near the bar. So I ordered, there was something on the menu called an improved grasshopper. Improved grasshopper. So I tried it, and it was really good. It was much better than your average grasshopper. And then I went up to the bar to compliment the bartender, and it was Paul. And I said, what makes this an improved grasshopper? And he said, because I made it. And that was like...
Well, it's true.
It was. you spoke truth. You spoke truth.
Yeah. Fair enough. Wow. Okay. So, Paul, what is an improved grasshopper?
It's really good.
This, you know,
I mean, you know, you'd have to sign a DNA.
Help me help you be a good guest on my radio show.
Is it a DNA or an NDA that you have to sign? One of the two.
Sign a DNA?
Yeah, that one.
That's your DNA signature.
What's your DNA signature?
No, it's you know, the grasshopper is a really weird drink because I work with the guy who was the grandson of the man that invented it. And a grasshopper at one time was basically brandy and green cream mint. And that was it. And then later it changed to where it's now white cream de coco, green cream de menthe, cream, all of that stuff. And I just added a few ingredients to it that make it just a much better drink that is not kind of, I can only drink like a third of it because it's too much. It's really easier to drink. And you know, one of the main ingredients in the grasshopper is still the heavy whipping cream.
Right.
If you use milk, it's no good. If you use half and half, it's better, but it's still meh.
Right.
But the heavy whipping cream is that's the key.
Because you need that consistency.
You need that consistency.
Didn't people get away from like cheaper versions too or worse versions? People got away from using brandy, right? They were just using like the sweet liqueurs and
like, it was you go to a place where they have grasshoppers, it's white cream de coco, green cream de menthe, and some kind of
dairy
product.
Yeah.
Yes. That's it. But that's not really
Yeah, you know, and I don't I don't know how you feel about this, Jeff. Like, I don't like those because I need that alcohol. I need that brandy kind of cuts through that viscous mouthfeel of the drink.
Well, it's what Jeff forgot to mention was we also had an extra improved where you got the grasshopper and a shot of brandy on the sides.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. gesticulating firmly.
That would be an improvement.
Yeah, that
but
would be really
to
an
me,
improved
the grasshopper
even if it was
is,
really bad.
It's something you were either drinking in isolation, you're not going to follow it up with anything because it is like
heavy,
you know, so heavy.
Bomb, yeah.
Or it's a good dessert drink, mm-hmm. which is, I believe, the way I had it the last time when I actually went up to Paul. And
It's a great dessert drink.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But I wouldn't want to start off with one and then keep drinking other stuff. It just would be a,
but,
I don't know.
But, you know, there's a lot of those drinks like that,
yeah.
like the White Russian or the Ramos Gin Fizz.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah,
sure.
I mean, I made one guy 8 pint size straight up Ramos Gin Fizzes that he all 8 of them drank within 2 hours.
God, that's just a stomach ache waiting to happen.
And it's kind of like, you want another one? No problem. But it's kind of, that's a lot.
That is a lot. And just so people know too, the drink was invented in New Orleans. My lovely wife who's sitting here helping me today, refers to the grasshopper as a glug glug drink. I'm an embarrasser, right?
Drink.
A glug glug drink because I make her a grasshopper at home, kind of following your spec, Paul, because you taught me how to do it, and it doesn't last very long. So it's glug, glug glug, and it's gone. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you have any other alcohol at home, or is it all glug glug?
Oh no, we gotta you gotta see our back bar. I mean, especially here at COVID. I mean, I had to take measures into my own hands here, and yeah. Sylvia thinks I have too much alcohol at home, but I mean, I'm a professional. Give me a break.
I don't even know what alcohol I have because I don't drink at home. So somebody, I get something, I'll just stick it in the closet somewhere.
Yeah, you mentioned that before we went on the air, and Jeff, we were taking issue with Paul over not drinking at home.
I have to take umbrage at this.
Come to your house and drink.
Okay, yeah, sure. Come on over. We can absolutely do that because then I don't have to drink alone, which was apparently also against your rules.
Well, what he was saying before we started was caused umbrage was that he said that if you drink at home alone, there's something wrong with you.
Right.
It's like, yes. I know there's something wrong with me, but it's not because I drink at home alone,
right.
which I do.
No, but that's just one of the things that show that there's something wrong. You know, if you drink at home alone, you should be in the dark with just the TV on, or not even, and that's it.
No, that's what I do. With the TV is on, or I'm in the backyard when it's not too mosquito-y, you know,
Sure.
Yeah, but that means they have a diverse thing of doing stuff. They just don't choose just one thing.
Well, I drink alone in different rooms.
No.
Does that absolve me of...
You have to get a spot.
Yeah, well, it's a change of scenery. I think that, You know, we all know that there's the sensory aspect of when you're drinking about, you know, the light in the room and the color and the temperature, and that affects how we taste things. I think you got to mix it up a little bit.
I don't drink alone in the front yard because neighbors, they don't need to know what I'm doing.
You do live in Jefferson Parish. So
I mean, I do. They would sort of frown on that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jefferson Parish, Tammany, like, you know, it's all the same.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. So I only drink on the front porch when I'm sitting with Sylvia.
But
the backyard is
drinking on a porch is fine. We don't have a porch.
Have a
I'd have to be just basically sitting in the yard drinking alone, which would not be a good look for anybody, let alone me.
But you know, Jeff, you are a professional, and I mean, you're doing research when you're doing this, right? I mean, that's what I always tell people: I'm doing research.
Well, it lets you get away with a lot of stuff. Like when I first moved to New Orleans from North Carolina. My doctor in North Carolina was a younger guy, and he was always very, very, you know, look, you have to, your body mass index is too high. You need to lose 5 pounds. You need to, if you want dessert, just eat a frozen grape. Stop drinking. Don't do this stuff. Don't do that. Don't do the other thing. Get this amount of exercise. So I was terrified of my first physical with a new doctor down in New Orleans. So I got into his office and I told him, you know, I know that I'm a, my mass body mass index is bad, and my blood pressure is probably a little high, but you know, I'm going to exercise more and blah, blah, blah. And he goes, you're fine. You're fine. I said, really? Why do you say that? He goes, well, you know, I just took your blood pressure, and I didn't have to put the cuff extension on your arm, so you're fine.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that, yes.
I knew I'd moved to the right place, you know.
That's why they tell you to get a second opinion.
Yeah,
right?
And I told him, I don't need a second opinion after that. And I told him, you know, I do drink for a living. He goes, I understand. Yeah, you don't have to explain yourself to me. And it's like, God damn it, I moved to the right. I moved to the right place. You know, it's like.
I remember when they were doing research at Latitude 29, they came up with some new drinks, and they were all like sitting around, and they invited me, and they're all taking like one sip, and they go, man, let's try this. I'm like, Hold on a minute. I did the real research. I drank everything that they left.
There you go.
Which means that they tasted like 8 drinks, and then somebody had to drive me home.
Yeah, that's a true professional, right?
I did all the research.
Yeah, we named that drink after Paul. It's called the Matt Shot. It's like,
do you still have the picture of Paul in the walk-in?
Of course we do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Well, let's do this, you guys. On that note, we'll explain the picture in the walk-in when we come back. We're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Friends, come on back.
Brought to you by the St. Rock Market, a local food hall featuring 12 unique food and beverage entrepreneurs serving globally inspired meals from barbecue platters to Mediterranean cuisine. Located at 2381 St. Claude Avenue, the St. Rock Market is open every day of the week for breakfast, lunch, dinner, coffee, and cocktails. We offer online ordering, curbside pickup, and both indoor and patio dining. Learn more at strockmarket.com.
Sitting here la la, waiting for my ya-ya. Oh, I'm sitting here la la, waiting for my ya-ya. Oh, it may sound funny, but I don't believe she's coming.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. As you know, we are chatting with Paul Gustings and Jeff Beachbum Berry. And I was going to ask you guys something. You guys are sticking around for the podcast only segment, Another Shot with NOLA Drinks. So we're going to get into, we're going to talk about this rum, privateer rum that we're drinking and some other things. But I want to talk about drinks that are made with Angostura bitters as the base. How's that? Can we talk about okay. that?
You mean like the Trinidad Sour?
Like the Trinidad Sour, and which is actually a favorite drink of mine. And Jeff, I'll tell a story. So how I met Paul Gustings was one day I wandered into Bar Tonique. This is right, I don't know, 10 years ago. It hasn't been open that long. Something like not too long after they opened. And I was sitting in there, and John Peterson, who you probably remember, was the bartender there, tall John. And it was like a Tuesday afternoon because I had nothing better to do than go to Bar Tonique on a Tuesday afternoon.
No, you were working.
I was working. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Jeff. And I ordered a Trinidad Sour, actually. We started talking about Angostura drinks, and then there's this, you know, cantankerous bearded fellow sitting around the corner of the bar.
Who was that?
From me. You were the only other person in the bar.
Oh.
So, and then he said, well, how about this drink called you called it like the Angostura Phosphate.
Angostura Rum Phosphate.
Yeah, and I think you had like a fancier name for it on the menu where you were at. But because you were at the time... so it was, you know, kind of a variation on that, but rum, which was my choice. That's what I got on with John about, is I wanted something. I get the sour concept and why you use rye in a Trinidad sour, but I'm like, it just fits to have a drink with rum and Angostura as the base. And so that's when Paul piped up and said that. And then I had learned that what's this phosphate stuff. And I'll throw this to you in a second here, Paul. But Paul at the time, as I learned, was basically the New Orleans phosphate drug dealer. And he was getting it for other bars, including Bar Tonique. Yes. He's like, John, you have a bar of the acid phosphate back there? And he's like, yeah. So then you walked him through how to make the drink, and it's a lovely drink. So why tell people? Yeah, it's a fantastic drink. Tell people about that drink, and then why acid phosphate? And a little goes a long way with that stuff.
Acid
I learned.
Acid phosphate is like the MSG of drinks.
There you go.
It's of course MSG has a really bad reputation, which is kind of stupid because it's salt.
Mm-hmm.
What it does, it enhances the taste of whatever ingredient you put in the drink. I think the exception to that would be like lemon juice,
okay.
because I don't think that would make any difference. But I don't know. I have no idea. I did it because somebody gave me a case of acid phosphate and somebody gave me 2 cases of Angostura rum.
Ah.
So like, I need to do something with this. So I made the Angostura rum phosphate. And I think it's a great drink. And the thing is, if you make it without the phosphate, it falls flat.
It does. That was the part that kind of
totally
blew me away about it. Yeah.
It looks different. It tastes different. It's just a totally different drink.
Can you spec the drink for us here? Do you mind?
Rum. Okay, now you're making me think.
But like, it's Angostura base, so it's like an ounce of Angostura rum.
Ounce and a half of Angostura rum, an ounce of simple syrup, an ounce of Angostura bitters, a couple of splashes of acid phosphate. Shake it with ice, strain it.
Yeah. It's a really good drink, Jeff.
Well, very simple.
It sounds like, I mean, the predecessor to that was something called the Angostura Phosphate, which was printed in 1908 in the Angostura recipe book. And it was lemon juice, phosphate, acid phosphate,
a
lot of Angostura, and I think, like you said, a little simple. It's actually really good as a non-alcoholic drink,
Is that the,
drink
the little thin Angostura book?
Yeah.
I never saw the recipe in there.
Yeah, it's
so, so it was a variation without rum then.
Yeah, but it's funny that Paul just sort of like pulled it out of the ether and created that drink because it's like very close to the original 1908 version. If just add rum, right?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Well, and I don't add any no lemon juice.
And no lemon juice, right.
Yeah,
right.
Lime juice though, right?
Right, and it's interesting you say that the phosphate and lemon would kind of fight each other. I can see that in a drink with some booze in it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because you got too much acid in there, right?
Yes, yeah. And I really like that drink.
I love that drink.
It's good.
It's great. Yeah. And then you got to be careful though with the acid phosphate, right? Like we're talking.
There's a drink that is 2/3 Calisaya and 1/3 acid phosphate.
Wow,
which I still haven't
really
made.
Kind of bitter and chalky and kind
which
of
I still haven't made because I forgot where my bottle of Calisaya is. Which you can't. Actually, it's available now, but. I'm still wondering what that tastes like.
Interesting.
So yeah, I need to taste it.
I didn't realize that acid phosphate was something that was found in drinks way back when.
Well, it's a soda fountain thing. I mean,
it's
from the 19th century. Yeah. And it's a way for people to get around using fresh citrus, which was expensive and very often unobtainable, you know, and very seasonal, you know, in North America.
Doesn't acid phosphate also come in separate varieties where, like, you can have a cherry taste?
Different flavors.
Flavors.
Those are all kind of archaic, but Darcy O'Neill in Canada, he's sort of like this bartender who was also a trained chemist, and he started marketing acid phosphate, which is how I tumbled to it.
Okay.
That's where I get mine from.
Yeah. It's an Art of Drink website. He may still be selling it. Fascinating stuff. Yeah. And people are always... I mean, I'm an old dog and these are new tricks, but I keep reading about acid-adjusted drinks where they're using different forms of acid instead of citrus to, like, lend an acidic quality to drinks. So it's kind of fascinating stuff, and it's all everything old is new again, right? That's what they were doing in the 1800s. You know?
Yeah,
makes 1900s, sense. Excuse me. 1900s.
Sure. That's really, really interesting. I
should
have
a soda fountain place in New Orleans.
Well, they should, yeah.
You know, there's I don't know what it is now. It used to be an old pharmacy on Ursuline and Royal Street, which has a fully functional soda fountain counter with everything behind it, all the chairs and everything. All
that's in the pharmacy museum
now.
Yeah, that's in the pharmacy
museum.
That's not the one?
No. It's the one on Royal and Ursuline. It's like a block and a half from where I live.
Hmm. Right where the convent is and stuff then.
A block up.
Okay.
Convent is on Charter Street.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Interesting. Cool. Yeah, I actually thought that acid phosphate was kind of one of those newfangled, you know, new wave, new cocktail
old
movement
school.
Drink, but old
totally
school.
Old school.
Just like you said, everything comes back around.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess when you say that it's old school, it makes sense because the person who introduced it to me was Paul Gustings in Bartonique. So, you know, I mean.
Back in the 1890s.
Asked me the other day when my passport expired, and I said in 2011, and she said over the phone, she says, "Oh, and you were a minor then, huh?" kinda.
That made you feel nice, didn't it?
I just think that's weird.
Well, you guys, we got about 2 minutes left before we're going to close out the radio portion of the show. Paul, you got a new gig, man. Where are you working?
I'm working at Alma, 800 Louisa Street. It's new Honduran food. We just got a liquor license, so on Saturday and Sundays we're going to be open for brunch, and we're going to have brunch drinks. A bunch of them that we're going to make up, and then we have regular drinks as well for the rest of the week, and that's Sunday, Saturday, and Sunday as well.
Awesome.
So it's 800 Louisa Street.
Yeah, and the website, friends, is eatalmanola.com. Go check out Paul there. And Jeff, we were saying about Paul, we'll be quick about this, that, you know, before we went on the air, that there were many I words that describe Paul. We were using words like insulting and idiosyncratic and other things, but he's also an icon here in New Orleans. And
iconic is another I word.
Yeah, it is, yes,
absolutely.
Exactly.
He is an icon,
and we need Paul behind the bar here.
The other one is Paul behind intelligent. The bar.
Absolutely.
All right. Again, we're going too far with some of these I words. We didn't do us. Jeff, we talked a little bit about, of course, the Mai Tai mix, the Wiki Wiki Mai Tai mix. But tell people where they can find Latitude 29, your fine establishment that is a bar. And I am legally obligated to say this on behalf of your lovely wife, Anine. It is a bar and a restaurant.
It is a restaurant with a bar, if you want to be technical.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
But we are temporarily closed due to COVID, but we'll be reopening sometime in February, and we are at latitude29nola.com.
Very, very good. And what about like the mix and like your books and all that good stuff?
Beachbumberry.com has all that stuff in it, and it's sort of like portaled all these different things. It'll take you to where you need to get the books or the Mai Tai mix or any of that stuff. So beachbumberry.com.
Very, very good. And we look forward to Latitude 29 opening back up. Very, very fine bar and restaurant, if you don't know.
It is.
Food's fantastic, too. That's because every time I'd have you on, like the first couple times you came on, Jeff, you would say bar. And then he would get upset. So
and rightly so.
And I mean, and the food there is tremendous. The ribs.
I was in the doghouse for quite some time after that. But that's where I started drinking alone, in the doghouse. Actually,
in the doghouse, right?
In the walk-in freezer, you're not alone. You're with me.
Yeah, I guess we'll get to that story in the podcast only segment, friends. But if you are listening here on the radio, I do encourage you to go to NolaDrinks.com. You'll get the podcast. You can hear these guys stick around. We use some more I words and maybe other words that you can't use on the radio. And we're going to talk about rum and a few other things. But hey. If you are listening on the radio, I do appreciate it. Remember to be kind to one another. As always, use your turn signal. And until next time, cheers, y'all. Yep, another shot with Nola Drinks. Thanks for being here, friends. Happy to have you here this week. Fun conversation we're having with Jeff and Paul, of course, as one would expect. Yeah, funny we never had these guys on together. Both are good friends with each other and with me, I think. And they've both been on the show quite a bit, but never together. So it's really a great conversation, a lot of fun, and not a lot of planning, as we've noted. We're going to bounce back over to the Southern Food and Beverage Museum and continue our featured interview with those two guys. We're going to talk about Privateer Rum, a very fine U.S.-made rum from Massachusetts. Our good friend Maggie Campbell produces that stuff, and it's fantastic. And we'll talk about a few other things, and I'll be back to close things out after that. Here we go. All right, everybody, up another shot with Nola Drinks. We are here at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. As you know, thanks to them for hosting us. Do go check out the Nitty Grits Podcast Network. Just go to southernfood.org and look right there at the top. You'll see Nitty Grits Media, and then click on that, and there'll be a link to the podcast network. A lot of great shows. It's a growing network, and happy to be one of the inaugural shows there on the relaunch. But we are chatting here with Paul Gustings and Jeff Beachbumberry. And guys, we were talking about all kinds of fun stuff during the show, fun stuff in between, as we usually do. Our good friend, mutual friend of ours, Jeff, Maggie Campbell, who is the head distiller and president of Privateer Rum, which I believe is in Ipswich, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Or she lives in Ipswich. I think the distillery is right around there, right? North of Boston.
Somewhere out there, yeah.
Somewhere up in Yankee land, right? And
it's above the Mason-Dixon line.
It's all above, you sure? That's all we know down here now.
The people who started the War of Northern Aggression, yeah.
Exactly. I always say when I moved down here, as you guys know, I grew up in California, and now that we're in the podcast segment, I can say this because, you know, it's like the Yankee stuff and the Reb stuff, and I'm like, you know, you guys can take the Yankee and Reb stuff and keep it to your fucking self. I'm a Westerner.
Right.
None of this really, it didn't affect me in one way or the other. The line didn't go any further. Mm-hmm. But back to the rum on that interesting note. So it's a really fine rum, Jeff, that and Maggie runs a great program. And I'll note, there's a show that's out now that you can get, friends, on our podcast network my show that was with the American Craft Spirits Association. Maggie is a former vice president of said association. Very, very talented individual. And she cranks out some great rum, man.
Maggie is a scary genius. I mean, she's scary because she's so young. And she knows more about how to make a world-class spirit than just about anybody I know, with a couple of possible exceptions who I won't name because the other people I don't name are going to get angry. But I think she's brilliant, and I think the rum she's making, especially the one we've been drinking, which is which one?
We are drinking the New England Reserve rum.
Right. I almost always drink rum with ice, no matter what it is or how old it is. Or how expensive it is, because I just like drinking spirits that way. But this one, this is the only thing I'll drink without ice in it. It's magnificent. It's a magnificent spirit. And it's an American rum, which is kind of amazing. To make a statement like that 10 years ago would have been like, who the hell talks about American rum, you know? And this is, I can't praise this rum highly enough, or her highly enough. She's my guru when it comes to all things. You know,
and she's a lovely human being too. And you said she's like scary talented, but she's a lovely person,
right? Which I really resent, because everybody else I've ever admired in the arts or in the spirits industry has been kind of an asshole.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah,
but Maggie is she's just a lovely human being, very empathetic. She cares about people. She's well read. She's just a fantastic conversationalist. It's really kind of obnoxious.
Yeah, right, right.
To tell you the truth.
You're making me feel inadequate right now.
As we all are in her presence, yes.
I have an I word too, impressed.
Oh, well, there you go.
So is that your take on the rum? It's very good, isn't it?
No, that was my take on the lady you were just talking about.
Oh, okay. Well, and the rum then.
Okay, the rum as well, because it is very good.
It's really, really, it's very, very nice. Yeah.
Excellent. That's been an I too, right? Excellent.
Excellent.
I live in New Orleans.
Yeah,
spell
sure.
Excellent with an I.
Sure, fair
excellent.
Enough. Fair enough. Yeah, it's a very fine program that they have going on there. And actually, Jeff, one of the reasons why I brought it in, and you know this, is I was talking to Maggie. So Maggie was on the show recently. We did the American Craft Spirits Association show talking about the craft spirits industry and how it's been affected by COVID and whatnot. But I had Maggie on about a year ago. That's actually how I met her, when Tales was still happening in person. And she had participated in a panel on diversity and inclusivity. With Jackie Summers and some other really great people who have all become friends since then, actually. And that's how I met Maggie, and we did a show on that. And anyway, so we just kind of keep in touch and chat from time to time. And I said, you know, Maggie, after all this time of conversation with you and having you on the show and so on, I've never tasted privateer rum because it's not distributed in Louisiana. And she said, oh, you know what? We have a mutual friend who has a stockpile of it. Go get with him. I'm sure he'll taste you on it. That would be you, Jeff. And so then I let you know that Maggie sent me your way to taste the rum, and you're like, I drank it all.
I'm not giving you any of my privateer rum. Go get your own privateer rum. No,
and then, so that's what I did. I reached out to Maggie. Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. You made me get up off my ass and do something, and then I played the little fiddle when she was on the show last time
was that
and sent me
about
a bottle of rum.
What was it earlier on about not only is she great at what she does, she's also a nice person?
Yeah.
She's very emphatic. Go get your own rum.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's me. That's not her.
I know. Yeah. That's what I meant.
I'm not saying I'm a nice person. I never claimed that.
Thank you for drawing that stark and needed contrast there, Paul. That was really good. So, yeah, not a lot of American rum, Jeff, out there. That who is anybody else? There's a little bit down here in Louisiana. People are doing some cane rum and stuff.
There's only one other American distillery that's kind of impressed me, and that's I'm spacing on the name, Kulawea. They're from the Big Island of Hawaii, and they're doing really interesting stuff. And I'm probably getting their name wrong, and I apologize. I've been drinking, but they're involved with a bunch of university agricultural experts, and they're reviving ancient strains of sugar that grew in Hawaii like centuries ago, and they're making rum based off of those strains. And they're doing sugar cane rums that are just amazing, and the sugar is being grown on the slopes of grown on the slopes of Kona, and it's amazing stuff. Kuleana.
Okay.
It just popped into my head. Kuleana.
Oh.
So that's, you know,
there's
that one,
Paul? There's a book that's called Kuleana, I think,
yeah,
which is about Hawaii. about the drinks there?
They did come out with a booklet. Yeah.
No, this is from the 50s.
No, that wouldn't be it. No, that was a little, but they're a little newer than that. But aside from some of the stuff that's going on in Hawaii with ancient strains of sugarcane, there's very little on the continent that impressed me rum-wise. And that's a shame because back in the, 18th and 19th centuries, rum was made all over the place here.
On the eastern seaboard, it was pretty common, right?
Yeah,
right. And
we had
tafia here in New Orleans made by the French Creoles. And Medford rum, was always a very highly sought after rum, domestic rum. But Maggie has kind of revived world-class quality American rum in a way that I don't think anybody else down here has.
Fair enough. Yeah. Paul, how would you define the style here of this rum? Because, I think we're talking about it being American rum, but, it's got a little bit of the funk that you kind of get from some of the Caribbean rums, but not a lot. It's got some sweetness, got some aging, but nothing's over the top. How would we describe this on the spectrum of rum?
Well, to me...
Talk to him about that.
Go ahead, but please continue talking. I'm just asking you to pass me the whiskey.
He's asking me the question. He's reaching out for the Angel's Envy bourbon that I also brought with me.
Thank you. We'll give a shout out to Steve Yamada there.
To me, this rum, what distinguishes this rum from a lot of other recent startup distilleries in the U.S. that are kind of grasping at straws and haven't really gotten their sea legs yet, is that this rum does what any world-class spirit does, which is it takes you on a journey. It's a story. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. There's the initial flavor hit on the palate, followed by a mid-palate shift, where colors wake up and mm-hmm. you've got a whole nother realm. And then there's the end note. And in this case, like any great spirit, it's got a long end note that gradually trails off and gives you like this really satisfying kind of finish.
Mm-hmm.
And as we all know, anybody who's ever tried to write a play or a screenplay, the third act is always the hardest one, and this one gives you a great third act, I feel. So I have to put it in those terms. I can't really say it's got funk, it's got this, it's got that. It's just a beautifully balanced and almost ethereal kind of spirit. Mm-hmm. It's just the best. I mean, I'm proving right now with my tongue-tied attempt to describe it that the best spirits they defy words. It's like music. Mm-hmm. How can you describe music? You're not going to fall short of what you're describing.
I always like to say this, that, when it comes to things, there's very few things in this world that are the perfect melding of the rational and the irrational.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can take a spirit, you can take wine, you can take a piece of music, and you can break that down into math or chemistry, right? But what makes these things great is the artistry and the irrationality of it that makes it what it is.
You can do all the deconstruction you want, but it's never going to even remotely approximate the visceral reaction you get from it, mm-hmm. whether it's music or spirit or theater or whatever.
Art, exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Art,
there's
painting,
very few things in this world that do that.
Yeah.
What do you
just like it?
Yeah.
I just like it.
It's like the Life cereal commercial. Paul likes it.
I didn't get the in between stuff, but the long lingering aftertaste is actually makes you like all fuzzy, worse than my beard. So that means it's good. And the initial taste, I think, is very, not really strong. It's not where they go it's soft.
It just sucks you in.
Yes, I like that.
It's a beautiful mouthfeel. Because, sometimes they can be a little over-viscous.
Mouthfeel, that's the word that mid-palate mouthfeel. Should have been using. Yes,
yeah.
That's another thing. Yeah,
yeah.
Very silky.
Yes.
Very silky kind of mouthfeel.
Because sometimes I find that they're kind of syrupy. Aged rums mm-hmm. can be syrupy, and this one has, it pushes to the sweet, right to the edge where you want it, but not too far. And it does kind of have that little bit of that earthy, grassy, that's what I was kind of calling the funk note to it, especially up front.
Yeah.
But, yeah, really. Well, props to Maggie. We'll share the segment with her.
Yay, Maggie.
Good job. Well, you guys, I know that, we got to get you out of here because Anine's coming, or you got to go pick up Anine, right?
Yeah, I got to pick up.
No,
Mrs.
he has to drop me off.
Oh, and they got to drive Paul.
Oh, we were
around.
Just going to leave you on
on the side in Wichita, Kansas. Thank you very much.
Just click your heels; you'll be fine. Three times. Well, put those ruby red slippers back on, Paul.
Left them at home.
All right, you guys. Well, so we'll make this podcast only segment kind of short. But thanks for coming on, both of you. It was good to have the two of you on together this time.
Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
And we kid, but Paul is a New Orleans institution, and we are very happy to have him.
Absolutely. It is another I Word institution.
Lockup.
400 Claiborne.
Thank you, Jeff.
It's very important to all of us that you're back behind the bar, and you've always been a good friend to me and a good friend to the show, and I'm very happy for you that this is going. But it's a pleasure to see you, my friend, as always.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Jeff, likewise, always a pleasure. Thanks for being gracious with your time and being a supporter of the show. And
love the show. Love you guys. Anytime, man. Anytime.
Likewise. Thanks, man. You guys, we're going to take a brief musical interlude, and I'll be back to close things out. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the show, friends, this week. Happy to have had you here, as always. A little programming note for you. Got a good show coming up next time around. I'll be out pretty quick. Here on podcast, we're going to be chatting with two friends of mine, Tiffany, the drinking coach, Barrier, and Kiata Mincy Parker. Both are out there in Atlanta in the ATL. And we're going to talk about kind of, you know, all kinds of different things. They're both very, very fine bartenders, educators, activists, do a lot of great things in the community. Kiata's done a really cool thing. We're going to highlight this just among other things. She started a community garden, but it's a community garden for bartenders, by and for bartenders, and it's called A Sip of Paradise Garden. We're going to learn about that. We're going to talk about Tiffany's recent appearance on the Food Network show The Kitchen, and have all kinds of other really important conversations with those two. So that's a lot of fun. Be on the lookout for that. That's going to drop pretty soon. Hope you enjoyed this show chatting with Jeff and Paul. Always a pleasure to have both those guys on, as we've noted about 10 times. Never had them on before together, which was kind of weird, but great to have them on. Didn't need a lot of planning, as we also noted a few times. When both those guys are on, it's like, and whoever they're on with, or if it's just them solo, whatever, don't ever need a lot of planning, just because of the depth of knowledge and experience. And they're both great storytellers, and you know, just such, you know, important icons. I kind of hate to use hackneyed expressions, but it's true in this case, important icons in the cocktail scene. And so it's just, you know, there's no planning. We just pour a couple drinks and we just start talking, and it's a lot of fun. I hope you found the show to be particularly enjoyable. I know I did, because it's just kind of cool just to shoot the breeze with these guys. And hopefully that came across to you as the listener. Do want to note, it's great to have Paul back behind the bar. You know, we talk about craft cocktails and the craft cocktail movement and things we've talked about on the show quite a bit in times past. And certainly, you know, when we look at the group of folks up in New York that we know so well, Dale DeGroff and all of those folks, people who've also been on the show, and I thank them for that. And, you know, that is kind of the touchstone for a lot of the craft cocktail movement going back to 1999, 2000, you know, with some roots a little earlier. But when we look at somebody like Paul Gustings, who's been a bartender in New Orleans for decades, since the 70s, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you know, kind of an OG in the whole scene. And, you know, I've said this on the show before, not going to go too far down this road, but one can argue that New Orleans is the original craft cocktail city. Actually, it is the original craft cocktail city. And even though, you know, like everywhere, probably kind of went vodka and other stuff in the 70s and things like that, Midori, oh yeah. You know, you've always been able, at least in some places, to find a good Sazerac, find a good old-fashioned, classic New Orleans cocktails, these things. And so it's been very interesting to be here in this city and see sort of how those two worlds merge, this sort of classic craft cocktail scene that New Orleans has always had, and then the sort of modern craft cocktail movement with, again, sort of mentioning that Touchstone group up in New York and in other places, and kind of how those merged. It's sort of always been going on here in New Orleans. And my point really is that Paul has always been a part of it for at least a very, very, not always, but for a very, very long time. And it's great to see him behind the bar. It's an important representation of history, of the cocktail, of having someone like Paul, who's worked in some of the most historic places in the city, get back behind the stick. And I think Jeff said this during the interview. It's just good to have Paul back behind the bar. It's really a necessary thing here in New Orleans. It's not the same place if he's not making drinks for somebody
somewhere. So go check out Paul at Alma and keep track of, you know, all that other stuff of what's going on with Jeff Beachbum. Barry, check out Latitude 29, a very fine establishment. Shout out to him. Shout out to his wife, Anine. And shout out to Paul Gustings. Oh, yeah. Two cocktail icons. Hope you enjoyed the show, friends. Be sure to catch the next one, as I mentioned, with next week with Tiffany, the drinking coach, Barrier, and Kiata Mincy Parker. That's our parting shot. Here's to you.